Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to be with you on this Tuesday, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online, sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, great new inventory with fabulous warranties. Warranties mean more than ever. As far as I'm concerned, they do. And a great service department that backs it up. They're always looking for new technicians because they have business. That's the reason why, the business. And that is going to be apply for a job there. I mean, it's something that very important. And could be a great opportunity for you to work with great pros and do great work. Routine, difficult to handle at all at Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. All right, so let's check the schedule for today. And let's see. I believe, did Mark Wogan reach today? Let me just check and make sure. Well, to be honest with you, I'm not sure. Caleb, you might know.
Yeah, Mark wrote Wogan-Rich.
Wogan-Rich at what time?
The email says 1:35 or 2:06, so...
Okay. So, 2:06, okay. All right. Now, Matt had a staff meeting yesterday. So we might be able to get a rant call out of him today. The Bills last night. My goodness. How do you do that? Oh, how do you do that? You have 25 coaches over there. I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding about the 25. You got 25 coaches over there. Right? And they got 12 people on the field, and he misses a 41-yard field goal. Like, egad. Today, the Bills fired their offensive coordinator, Ken Dorsey, and Joe Brady. And Joe, of course, was here at one point many years ago. He is now going to be the play caller for the Bills. But that's where they are. I mentioned this at the end of the show yesterday. Oh, we have Neil Coulong today, too, obviously. You always have Neil. And you said Mark is 2:06?
It could also be 1:35 as well.
Yeah. If we could go 1:35 that way, Neil Coulong, how about that? Can you do that?
I think so.
Okay, good. Good, and then go for it. I don't know, Matt's calling in with his rant right now. He's all fired up about something. And get him on to. Spew madisms. They're madisms. That's what we call them. All right. Then I'm going to get into a couple of other things before we get there with our various guests today. And Frank Bodani, I think, is scheduled for tomorrow. High school roundtable, what's left? It's Zach Showers is who's left. But that's not, you know, look, I think we all expected that's the way it was going to be. I mean, that's the way it was going to be, was that Zach would probably be the last one standing, and that's what's happened. The Landon Van Der Esch out for the rest of the year with the Cowboys. Knows how, I mean, you know about a guy who knows how to play? He knows how to play. And it's something that is important. And, you know, or late, I think I said Landon. It's Leighton Van Der Esch. Neck injury. And they also think that his career is on the edge. All right. He's driving to Hazleton, which puts anybody into a mood.
You're not wrong about that, but at least I'm not the one that's physically driving. One of our good Denver guys and directors here, Dylan Levkevich, is doing the driving, so I have to give him a shout-out for that. So I have the ability to call and drive it in. What's up, Steve?
So you're at a point now in your career where you have your own driver? Wow.
Well, see, we trade off. So I drove. He and I trade off all the time. So
what did you drive? You drove from the parking space to the edge of the parking lot, and then he took over.
I drove. That's how it goes. Well, one person drives 1 week, one person drives the other week. It just depends.
Very nice. Very nice.
But I definitely needed to call in today because I've had it up to here with everything related to Michigan football. And between the actual game itself in Happy Valley last week and then just the overall just bombardment of everything happening around this Jim Harbaugh story, I mean, it has gone from nauseating to I don't know what, but it's gone past nauseating at this point. I first got to start with Sherrone Moore and the way he was crying after the game with Jenny Taft. Are you serious? It sounded like the guy's dead. The guy was just suspended for something he should have been suspended for. He's not dead. And then all these texts and calls and emails and reaching out to Santa Ono, and he had to put out a statement saying, thank you for this and that. The guy's not dead. The guy is out of there because he cheated. He went out of his way and let other guys on his coaching staff and his football staff cheat within his own conference. And the fact that anybody has any problem with what the Big Ten did, to me, ought to have their head examined. This is a guy that went out of the way, and Connor Stallions, that went out of the way to cheat and get these signals of all the other Big Ten schools. So, yes, the Big Ten needed to do something. And I wish the Big Ten rules, the competitive rules, would allow the conference to impose a postseason ban this season, but obviously that's not the case. So I think the Big Ten did all that it could, and then we'll see what happens in the courts. But, like, just enough of this. Oh, woe is me, Jim Harbaugh, we hardly knew ye. Enough!
Well, it is, of course, they're doing the us against the world thing.
Exactly.
It's like, you know what? You know, exactly what, other than the bad publicity you're getting left and right from the media, it hasn't hurt you in the polls. It hasn't hurt you with the college football playoff, right? And it's, look, I give them credit for playing very well. They did what they needed to do. It was their toughest test of the season by a wide margin. They went on the road. They won it. They got a lot of credit for it. The emotions surrounding this, here's the part. We've heard a lot of words from Michigan, right? A lot of words. What words haven't you heard? The words you have not heard is, we categorically deny this. We didn't do it. What day were those words spoken? I haven't heard that, not one, unless I've missed something. And please, somebody call me if I miss something, just as a just in case. I have not one time heard somebody at Michigan say, we categorically deny this, we didn't do it. Okay. I mean, again, if you can find somebody saying that, then please tell me, that way it will correct the record. But I haven't heard a single person in Michigan in any interview they've done. They've done a lot of end runs, a little this, a little bob, a little weave. We're going to go to court, blah, 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 and our honor, and da-da-da-da-da. Nobody has come out and said, this is wrong. We categorically deny it.
I haven't seen it either. I'm with you. And here's the other thing that also kind of nauseates me about this. It's like we're acting like, because I know it's not ideal for this decision from the Big Ten to be as close to what was, but by the time they had to get on the plane to come over to State College, right? Should they probably have made the decision a little sooner? Yeah, I'll give you that. But to act like this was sort of a competitive disadvantage for them as to whether or not they're going to have their head coach or not, guess what? They were just through this for almost three games earlier in the season. They had to have had a contingency plan anyway because they had the suspension in there a couple of weeks before everything happened with the NCAA. So it's not like they probably didn't have a plan. You just used that same plan. It's not that difficult.
I mean, it's the fourth game they've coached without him this year on the sideline.
Yeah.
The first three games. I mean, a little different competition at home. But they knew exactly what to do and where to go because they had experience doing it already. On the broadcast on Saturday, Jack and I never mentioned his name once. And the reason is, to be honest with you, just a normal conversation, there was no need to. Okay? Now, could the Big Ten have handled the information to him better? Yes. My understanding is that as they were landing, you know how your phones kick back in as you're landing? And I remember when the NCAA tournament got canceled, we were landing from the Big Ten tournament, and all of a sudden everybody, all of our phones, you know, on the approach all lit up with the tournament's canceled. Well, evidently that's how Michigan found out. There's got to be a better way than to find out than that. But other than that, you know, I think the Big Ten is, you know, there are 14 constituencies, soon to be 18. And you have to take them into account too. It's not a one school conference. But again, if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. And please call me and correct the record. I've not once from the president, Harbaugh, I didn't know anything about it. Well, that's not denying it happened. Okay? Which person went on the record and categorically denied that it happened? Nobody.
Exactly.
I can't find a single time. So that can't be the only thing.
Actually, that was about it. I've just been so fed up with everything Michigan related, and I've probably vomited several thousand times in the last week seeing all this stuff. I just needed to get all this off my chest because the Big Ten needed to do something because of what you just said. When you have all the other administrators and coaches in the conference saying you need to do something about it and you don't, and this is your first time at the helm as Big Ten commissioner, you're going to lose everybody right off the bat. And I said this on the show a couple of weeks ago. So they had to do something. They did it right. They probably just should have done it a little bit sooner. But this just everything related to this Michigan thing, Steve, I just had to get it off my chest because, I mean, this was about as nauseating and, quite frankly, I would say borderline embarrassing as it gets for college football.
Well, you know what? When you're doing something like this, you do have to be careful that you are crossing every T, dotting every I, because you are, you know, it's a big decision to make, especially in the middle of a season. And they must feel that they have enough evidence from video and so forth that tells them what's going on. How about that? They've got enough. And that's the issue. And they've got video. There's a money trail. There are issues. Always in these situations, follow the money. Always. Always follow the money. Right. Now, that's always been the key to the success in your career. You've always followed money.
Well, I only learned from the guy in the corner office after all these years.
We're not exactly... Well.
Yeah, I admit, it's not my finest moment, but, you know, we all have that once in a while.
Yeah. Anything else on your mind?
You know what? I'm good. It was a bye week for the Eagles, so we're all good to go there. Now we'll see what happens, Jason, in the second half.
Jason Kelce was good on Thursday Night Football. He's really
good. You know what? I did not get a chance to see him do the game with Alan Kirk,
but I'm
not surprised at all.
He's good. Really good. You know, he did a few couple series or whatever, and then he did the post-game show. But, yeah, I was impressed. He's got a job when he's done.
Absolutely.
So, all right. Enjoy Hazleton. Tell everybody there we said hi.
I will do that, absolutely.
All right. the suit there is loved in Hazleton. You know? You know what they you want to know what they love about him? When he's driving away.
A couple things.
When he's driving away. All right, so.
There it is.
All right.
Appreciate talk to you guys next week.
See ya. All right. We'll take a break. Come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, the best in new inventory with great warranties. Terrific pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Great service department that backs it up every step of the way. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Joined now by the outstanding Mark Wogenrich, SI.com. Mark, welcome back. Great to have you with us again.
Always appreciate it, Steve. Thanks.
Never a dull moment. So,
you and me both.
Yeah, never a dull moment. All right. So, everyone saw what happened with Ohio State, and you've been in all the press conferences, both home and away, and the comments that have been made. With the comments that have been previously made, especially after the Ohio State game, were you then in any way, shape, or form surprised by the move Sunday, or did you think it would come later?
By the move Sunday, yes, initially. James Franklin's explanation about it Monday made complete sense. It's just, I put it in a historical context with him that he's never been that coach to make the move in season.
That's right.
And, so that's, I guess, where my head was at. I just simply wasn't expecting it to be Sunday. It completely makes sense because I think James ascribes to that management style that says don't rush a decision, but then don't delay the action when you've made the decision, if that makes sense. That's pretty much what he said. You know, once he decided to make that was what he was going to do, he had to do it. And that gets him in the market that much sooner. It also gets his team, actionable in the situation now where they can hit a refresh last couple of games, get some new ideas, think critically about where they were, and make that transition reinvigorate people to make that transition. So ultimately, especially after yesterday, after hearing James talk about it yesterday, it was no surprise at all then.
Let's take Ohio State and Michigan. What was your evaluation of what you were seeing with the Penn State offense against Ohio State and Michigan?
Well, going back to Saturday, I think you've talked about it. I thought they ran fairly well.
Yes, they did.
Against Michigan. I mean, I looked at some of the numbers. Like, first down, they averaged 6.5 yards a carry on first down. So that was, I mean, that was the kind of football that they want to play. That was scheduled football, right? But second down was not good. It was, you know, Ohio State's third down was their detrimental down, obviously, 1-for-16. It felt like more second down was the issue, was an issue against Michigan.
Yeah.
Because they, if you average 6.5 rushing, their average third down distance, said the stats up, was 5.5. So they were gaining a yard, essentially, on average on second down. They weren't then continuing what they were doing. And I think it also felt like against Michigan, they weren't giving Drew Aller at least an opportunity to go in rhythm, even the, or to gain a rhythm. And James Franklin had said that. He said that after the game, and you know, we kind of expanded upon that Saturday. And you can run by throwing. You know, so they could have given him some run type throws instead of actually just running into those looks. And I think by then, the third or fourth quarter against Michigan, that, at that point you're asking Drew to kind of assume the all the responsibility, and it just didn't look like he was in the, he had been positioned to do that, or at least he wasn't put in a position to do that. He accepted the blame. Drew accepted the blame. He's going to do that. Players are going to do that, but you can't expect him to go through this game of this insistence on first down that they were going to run against a look and not give him at least some opportunities to throw, at least to set him up for the third, fourth quarter when he's going to have to be in position to do it.
And I'll just at least back that up with the statistical part of it. Penn State had 22 first down plays, and Mark's exactly right. I felt the same way. They ran the ball very well on Saturday, but 19 of the 22 calls on first down were runs.
Yeah, I think he only completed one of his passes on first down.
One of three. Yeah. Okay. So now how interested are you with this Saturday? I mean, it's the same personnel. I got that. But as to what it might look like on Saturday, how interested are you by this?
Very much. I'm interested in how the running backs coach and the tight ends coach handle the quarterback, if that makes sense. Because I think they need to be in a position, again, I think they need to be in a position to make Drew Aller comfortable or to give him at least tools in plays that will make him comfortable. There probably should be more of a mix. You know, Rutgers is not a slouch defensively at all.
That's right. That's right.
But Penn State's going to have opportunities because they're going to have offensive possession opportunities because Rutgers is not really – they're not an offensively really challenging offense right now. They're struggling to throw the ball. They, you know, came up scoreless against Iowa. So I think Penn State's defense is going to give that offensive position to produce in this game. Rutgers' defense is going to test them quite a bit. So I think Jaywon Sider and Ty Howell have to be able to, at this point, give Drew some confidence, even a confidence in the sense of having him throw the ball. I remember after the Maryland game, Drew talked about feeling kind of this renewed confidence, something that he had in high school when he was in an offense that threw 50 times a game, and he seemed to have felt that at Maryland, and that's a function of the kind of defense they're playing, you know, all those sorts of things. But to me, I think their biggest step is to kind of reinvigorate the confidence in Drew and then in the passing game on top of that.
Big picture now, I mean, there's still more games to be played in this season, but they've already now played Ohio State and Michigan. It didn't go well for Penn State in either one. So are they any closer? Are they the same or further behind, in your opinion, after watching how it played out this year?
Yeah, well, if you subscribe to the argument that if you're standing still, you're falling behind, then they fell behind. Now, these were not blowout games like some of them have been in the past. And I go back to that Ohio State game And if Curtis Jacobs' touchdown stands,
yeah.
If there's not, if there's not a penalty between one of the best defensive players in the country against maybe the best offensive player in the country, we could be talking about a completely different situation here. I think that's how close some of the margins are. But when you're in that, when you're kind of in that margin of being very close, it can feel wider than maybe it truly is. It's like, Penn State is at 35,000 feet as a cruising altitude, but those two teams are at 38,000 feet. And, this is probably not a great analogy because the altitude gets thinner up there, so it's easier to climb. But there's always that belief, there's always that idea that just getting to the top level, the elite level, is harder than getting through the incremental levels below that. So I think they're probably as close as they have been. It's just that, again, if you're static, then it feels like you're falling further behind them.
Yeah. Okay. So the team now in this particular week, it's going to be interesting to see how they react to all this. But what's interesting is that so people are forgetting it is senior day. It never really has come up. Right? I always find that what's interesting about senior day is just because somebody runs through the tunnel doesn't mean they're coming back. But I'm always interested in who actually runs through it. What about you?
Absolutely, and especially now, I believe is this the last year of the COVID extra year of eligibility?
I think next year. If you combine redshirting with COVID, I think it's next year.
Right, that's what I was thinking. Is either this year or next year? Probably, I think you're probably right. That probably goes next year. So, absolutely, that takes a little bit of it off because that's a decision. Sean Clifford made his decision too. That was probably, at least the end of the season, after the season. But yeah, there are players. That always intrigues me of who decides that this is going to be their last go around. From many perspectives, and it's interesting to me that this is not this result being 8-2 now, potentially 10-2, is not the result that players like Olufoshinu and Theo Johnson and Adisa Isaac and Curtis Jacobs came back for.
Right,
they will tell you that. They will tell you that flat out. That we didn't come back to go 10-2, but they also didn't come back to go 8-4. After losing like the two games that they probably on their schedule that they wanted most,
right?
So I get a sense, I was there in the post game with Theo Johnson, and to see the level that he cares,
yes,
about the past, present, and future of this team, there's still a core of guys that they're going to try their level best to make sure that this team does not go 8-4, 9-3, whatever you want to say. He's bought in. Like, a guy like Theo Johnson is just completely bought in, and that's the kind of player that you want to see at least to go out head held high, having given pretty much whatever he possibly could have, and having an opportunity to go 10-2 and back to another New Year's Six Bowl.
It's when you look at the entire landscape, has anybody played two of the top four teams in the college football playoff rankings? I think Penn State's the only one, right? And maybe, because Ole Miss has played Alabama and Georgia, but
yeah, right.
Is there anybody else?
No, but Notre Dame is not. Notre Dame played one, right? Because they played Michigan this year,
right?
When James Franklin says we've lost the number one and number three teams in the country, he's not wrong about that. That is absolutely certifiable. That's factual. So 10-2 to losing to those two teams can feel Groundhog Day-ish.
Sure. Yeah.
I think that is where it comes down. Is that another, you know, back-to-back. If you go 20-4 regular season over the last 2 years and 20-0 and 0-4, it still feels like, as you asked before, you're not getting any closer to those two teams. And I felt that feels like that's what this season was supposed to be about. And coming up short both ways, while then again 10-2, and having just the unfortunate luck of Ohio State and Michigan being de facto on your schedule this year, and also having the teams that they do, and you putting everything into it and just not getting there, that's frustration all around. I'm sure in Lash, the frustration is probably an order of magnitude higher than it was in Beer Stadium.
Right, no question. Mm-hmm. Next year, it's a 1-8 team. Next year includes Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA. And contrary to popular belief, just so people know, Michael Penix, Bo Nix, and Caleb Williams will be in the NFL. So all three have to replace their quarterbacks next year.
Right.
There's no Michigan until 2026. The playoff expands to 12. Mm-hmm. Is that going to give everybody, or can it give a better gauge on where the program is with those factors in play?
Yeah, it absolutely should. And they're going to go into I think they'll go into next season, assuming that the arc continues upward now after this year, right? Assuming they do finish 10-2 and nothing else happens after this to change that narrative. Going into next year, coming into this year, you're saying you've got to be one of those two teams. Going into next year, I think you believe you have to be in that 12-team playoff in the first year. Having not made it through as close as you've come several times, I think Penn State has to feel like that the 12-team playoff is an absolute kind of baseline for next year. It has to be an absolute goal to get in there. And, I mean, that would be a mile marker for the program. Next season, absolutely.
Yeah, I know I jumped way ahead on that. I just took the clock and kicked it ahead 12 months for you. So
you're not the only one doing that, I'm sure.
Right. Well, and I'll ask one more, Mark. I mean, obviously there'll be a timing as to when a new offensive coordinator is named. It's going to be sometime, you would guess, between December 4th and December 20th. And the reason is the 4th is the Monday after the championship games, and the 20th is National Letter of Intent Day. So it's going to be somewhere in there. How interested are you going to be by the perceived style of this offensive coordinator? Because you do have quarterbacks that do bring certain things to the table that are different.
I think that's got to be one of the very biggest issues for an offensive coordinator coming in. Maybe not so much even the style that they've run, but how are they able to tailor what they do to specifically Drew Aller, secondarily Bo Prabula, and then the offense in general. It always felt like James Franklin that, the 16-17 offense with that particular talent and that coordinator was what James generally the style they wanted to run. Not that he's not adaptable, that he's committed entirely to running like the RPO kind of thing, but that's just generally the style that he would like to go. He likes running quarterbacks, and they don't necessarily have that right now, at least in Drew, to run that particular style. Not that Drew can't run, but that style doesn't, I don't think that style suits his strengths fully. So the style of the next coordinator, while they could have run whatever, air raid, anything like that, if they bring elements of that to Drew and fit it to him, that to me is the most important thing, is being adaptable while having something that you can install quickly, that Drew can install quickly, and then get going. I don't think you want to get into a situation where it was like Sean having to do it, going through a new offense every 18 months, kind of thing, which is essentially what Sean Clifford did. I don't think you want to be in that with Drew. He needs the next 2 years in something very specific.
Mark, always a pleasure.
If he gets to the next 2 years.
Right. No, I know. I know what you mean. Mark, it's always a pleasure, Mark. Thanks so much for the time, the analysis, and everything. Appreciate you.
Yeah, talk to you too. Thanks, Steve.
Mark Rogenrich, SI.com. We'll come back with more in a moment. Great to have you with us today here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Neil Kulwanger, I think in the next half hour we have Neil. And then we'll talk about a few items in the final half hour today. It's great to have you with us on this Tuesday. As Penn State gets ready for Rutgers coming up on Saturday, Senior Day at Beaver Stadium at noon, on the air at 10:30 on Eagle 107. The Bills' loss last night was bizarre. I mean, first, I will say this very quickly, though, about Russell Wilson. Well, I don't know, it was about a month ago, 5 weeks ago. We're like, geez, I mean, look at him. He can't move. He seems bigger. He's not quick. He's not making decisions. He's actually played really well the last month, and he played very well last night. Wow. Something else. Now, how they won the game at the end by missing a field goal and then having 12 men on the field. To then set up, instead of a 41-yard miss, to then set up a 36-yard field goal. Wow. Crazy. They did make a move with their offensive coordinator, Ken Dorsey, out. And Joe Brady's in, so Joe gets the job there to call plays. I mean, he's, you know, it's an interim offensive line.
Your home for news, AccuWeather, and sports. Celebrating 90 years of serving the Susquehanna Valley. We are WKOK Sunbury.